This is one of those things that we desperately need to have a conversation about. But every time we open our mouths, we make it worse.
It is deemed a growing threat to public health. Measles, mostly wiped out in Canada, but...
We have now identified a total of 8 cases in Vancouver, all of which are associated...
with 3 Vancouver area schools. In the meantime, at least 33 students and a staff member are barred from attending school because they're...
The baby boy now quarantined inside his Burnaby townhome.
He cannot leave the house. He can't have visitors. It's unfair. And to be perfectly honest, it's infuriating.
It is easy, and to be honest with you, I've done this, to label people who choose not to vaccinate their children as dumb, or negligent, or both, and to do it even more loudly every time we hear about a new measles outbreak. But does that solve anything? After all, not everyone can vaccinate their children, and some parents have valid reasons for not doing so. And other parents are victims of bad science, of fear, of junk ads designed to sell useless supplements. And yes, some people are dumb, or negligent, but those aren't the people we're going to convince, and we desperately need to start convincing people. So where did the modern anti-vaccination movement come from? How dangerous is it getting? How can we debunk the myth that make parents doubt the science without pushing them further into their corners by making them feel stupid? And yes, we do have to do that, even though it's frustrating, because whatever you think of parents who choose not to vaccinate, it's not themselves they're harming. It's their kids, and it could be our kids. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Andre Picard is the health reporter for the Globe and Mail. He has no doubt been having this conversation for a while now. Andre, why are we even talking about this in 2019?
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, it feels like the 1950s again or something, but we're having it because there's such a large number of people who are refusing to be vaccinated. So we're getting these outbreaks all over the world. Now, in one part of the world, it's lack of access. In the Western world where we live, it's just people, I think, taking these things for granted. They've forgotten what infectious diseases are like, how damaging they are to children. And, you know, there's huge pockets of people who are unvaccinated, and that just lends itself to outbreaks as are happening now.
And I think some of us take it for granted in Canada, especially, and we see this in the United States, that they're struggling with some outbreaks. But tell me what's going on in Vancouver right now.
Well, there's a little outbreak at a school, at a French school. A couple of students had traveled to Vietnam. They were unvaccinated for many years, contracted measles, and then measles spreads very, very quickly. So it's eight, nine cases, I think, confirmed to date, but we'll see how it plays out.
Now, like you said, it's kind of a generational thing where we haven't really grown up with this. So at the risk of sounding dumb, tell me about measles. What is it?
Yeah, so measles is a viral infection. I'm of the generation. I'm old enough that I had measles. I was from the pre-vaccination era. So you get a itchy rash, and it's a little bit unpleasant for most people. So not a big deal for most people, but with all infectious diseases, once you have an infection, your body's immune system reacts, and it doesn't always react properly. So what happens often is you get overheating, if I could put it that way. So you get a fever, and a fever can cause meningitis. Meningitis can cause brain damage. So measles, before vaccination, was the leading cause of what we used to call mental retardation, so brain damage, kids with developmental disabilities. A number of kids died. It's not that deadly, but a number of people died of meningitis. And then all kinds of disabilities, also the leading cause of deafness in children in my era. So there's all these consequences of having a fever, and the fever is a result of infection. And that's true of all childhood illnesses. Measles in particular is really spreads really quickly. They call it the most infectious disease in the world. So it's really easy to catch. And it tends to have particular damage on hearing. So I don't know why, but a lot of kids were deafened by measles.
So why the hell wouldn't people vaccinate their kids against this?
Well, there's any number of reasons. So there's a lot of conspiracy theories. I think there's a lot of well-meaning parents who are just concerned and don't really see it as a threat. So this is invisible. One of the interesting things about the Vancouver case is when these kids went to the hospital, the doctors didn't even recognize it. So if you were a doctor in the 1950s or 60s, you could recognize measles in a second, but we don't see it anymore. So it's become invisible. So people say, why would I put this drug into my child's body? I love my child to protect them from some theoretical threat that I've never seen. So a lot of it is, I think, well-intentioned and well-meaning, but very naive. Then there's a sort of a small minority of people who are really anti-vaccination. You know, they think that Big Pharma is a huge conspiracy. Many of them are selling alternate products themselves, so that's, we can't forget that. There's a money issue here. They want to cash in on this fear, so that's a bad element of this. So all kinds of little reasons like that. But I think the big one, if I could explain the reason in a word, it's fear. People are fearful of vaccines more than they are of disease because they haven't seen disease.
When we talk about the fringe element of conspiracy theories that come behind the anti-vaccination movement, there's always that one study that comes up. Can you tell me a little bit about where that study came from and how credible it is?
Yeah, so the famous Andrew Wakefield study back in the early 90s, which concluded that people who get the MMR vaccine, which is measles, mumps, rubella, so you get these shots three together, so it's fewer needles. He made this link with kids having autism. So this is a small study. It was subsequently shown to be fraudulent. Essentially, he had picked out the children selectively, eliminated those who didn't fit his idea. So what it was is an association. So kids tend to be diagnosed with autism around the same time they get childhood illnesses. So people think there's a connection. They actually just sort of happen at the same time in childhood. So anyhow, long story short, not only was this study debunked, there's no actual link, but it turns out that Dr. Wakefield had published this study in an attempt to sell his own measles vaccine. So he wanted to sell an alternate vaccine, which to me is the ultimate irony in this. He's become sort of the big anti-vaccine guru, but initially he was trying to promote a vaccine to make himself money.
Why does it still persist? Like, it does seem like a study that's been so thoroughly debunked, and yet it's still cited in a ton of places.
I think it persists because of autism is such a bedeviling condition. We don't know what causes it, so people are desperate to find reasons. People are desperate to want their child to not have autism. So that's the element behind it. So any little thing, you know, ooh, I'm not going to take the chance, maybe it is true. So people have doubts. And I like to emphasize, I don't think people who don't vaccinate are evil. I think most of them are well-intentioned. And again, I come back to that Vancouver case. When that father spoke publicly, he talked about that. He said, oh, when my kids were young, the whole vaccine autism link was out there, and I didn't want them to have autism, so I didn't do this. And he regrets it now, of course, but it was well-meaning.
Is there anything that you've seen in your work or even just in discussions you've had with people that strikes you as a good way to sort of bridge that gap without judgment or without criticism, but actually help people who are confused or who are, to your point, well-intentioned but believing faulty science to actually come around to the medical consensus? Does anything work?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, and entire books have been written about this. How do you address vaccine hesitancy? And the sad truth is, the thing that works best is their kids getting sick. So this father, you know, whose kids, three kids got measles, is going to become a real zealot for vaccination. But unfortunately, you know, that's not very efficient manner. It shouldn't take that. But I think what we find is generally is people listen to their peers more than they listen to experts. So it has to be discussions among parents about why we vaccinate and why we don't vaccinate. And part of the problem is, to be honest, the large majority of people do vaccinate their kids, 85-90%, and they're quiet. They don't challenge people who say, oh, you know, why are you poisoning your kid? So I think some of it is we have to, those of us who are believers in vaccine, and I shouldn't use the word belief because it's science, so those of us who are proponents of vaccination, should be more outspoken and challenge people, but not in an obnoxious way. When I'm on Twitter and I tweet my articles out about vaccination, it disturbs me when say, well, these are idiots, they're stupid. And that's, you're never going to convince people by doing that. I personally am not a fan of mandatory vaccination. I think it's counterproductive. I think people have to come to the decision. I think we have to make it difficult to say no, but I think at a certain point we have to respect people's choices for better or worse.
When you say the vaccination rate is 85-90%, have we seen that actively dropping recently, and is there concern there?
Well, we've seen it drop in parts of Europe very substantially. Britain, for example, where Wakefield is from, where that study got a perverse amount of attention, the rates of MMR vaccination dropped pretty dramatically, and that's concerning, and they're paying the price for it. Now there are more than 8,000 cases of measles in Europe last year, a few dozen deaths. So that's concerning. The problem in Canada is we actually do a very poor job of tracking vaccinations. So the short answer is we don't know. We have little studies here and there where we can look and see how many people are vaccinated, but there's no central registry. For many years, public health people have been calling for a registry. So we often know when people aren't vaccinated because they get sick, but we don't know how many people actually are vaccinated, and that's problematic.
Oh, that's funny, because we spoke to Tavia Grant and Eric Andrew G about the data deficit last week, and I didn't realize that It would impact that as well.
Yeah, that's a very good example of a serious data deficit, and one that's becoming more and more alarming as these outbreaks occur, because it's really important to know who's not vaccinated. So if you take the Vancouver school, for example, they did a big panic, we have to find out who's not vaccinated. And it turned out about 30 people in the school, and they've been sent home. So they're withdrawn from school to not risk being exposed.
Is this something, as a health reporter, is this something you see in other issues that you cover, this hesitancy to believe medical science, or is this a problem kind of unique to vaccinations?
It's particularly severe with vaccination, but it's not unique. You have all kinds of issues. People worry about food. They worry about prescription drugs. You know, a lot of people say, I'm not going to take that heart drug. I'm going to take my root of valerian or something like that. So people have this odd notion of something is better because it's natural. And I use that word in quotes because not sure what that means. Most drugs are derived from plants. So there's these weird distinctions that we make. We'd often look for magical solutions and alternative products, alternatives to vaccine look compelling because nobody says anything bad about them because essentially they don't work, so they don't harm you. The reality of drugs, I'd like to remind people, every drug that has a benefit has a potential downside, and we shouldn't hide that. And I write openly about that. I think that's part of convincing people. You have to tell them, yes, vaccines can harm you sometimes, but in a very small number of cases. And when they do, the state, I think, has an obligation to compensate. And we do have compensation plans in some parts of Canada for people who are vaccine damaged, is the terminology. And that's the reality. Some drugs do harm, but they do way less harm than the underlying disease.
Does it feel to you like we are questioning medical science more than we used to, or sort of moving away from it, or at least in parts of the population?
Oh, I don't think so. You know, the anti-vaccine movement was much stronger 150 years ago than it was today. In Montreal, where I live, had the biggest outbreak of smallpox in the history of Canada. Hundreds of children were dying, and there were, you know, as many as 20,000 people who went out in what was a small city at the time and protested against vaccines.
Really?
Now we have the internet, so the internet spreads stuff very quickly, but they had their version of the internet then. Back in the 1920s, at the turn of the century, people would put on the coffins of their children, killed by vaccination, when in fact they were killed by smallpox. There's a real interesting history to anti-vaccination. It's been around since Jenner developed the first vaccine in 1776, and it'll be with us forever.
I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, it's lots of interesting history in medicine, and if you, I'm a big fan of reading history of medicine, and it informs, I think, a lot of what goes on today. You know, there's that saying, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, and that's very true in healthcare.
It really does seem like smaller pockets of militant opinion get blown out of proportion when it comes to issues like this.
Well, what we have today is a much more effective loudspeaker than we've ever had, and it's called the internet. So very obscure opinions can be magnified tremendously in a way they couldn't be before. And they play into fears. They, you know, play into beliefs. A lot of the outbreaks of infectious disease happen in religious communities. We can't hide that. Some of them are very anti-vaccination. There's a big outbreak in New York now among a Hasidic Jewish community, which doesn't believe in vaccination. So it's kind of predictable where these things will happen, and we have to find ways of countering that.
I know you mentioned that you're not a fan of forced vaccination, but what are there any legal options that could be effective? Because when you sort of look at this discussion on the internet or even in newspapers, you see people suggesting perhaps a tax or charges of negligence or that kind of thing. Is there anything that you think would work from sort of a legal framework?
I think we have to make it difficult for people, for example, to enroll their children in school if they're not vaccinated or in daycares. So the question becomes how difficult do you make it? So I think what the evidence shows us is that if parents have a child who's not vaccinated, you have to bring them in, you have to make them justify it, you have to talk to them about the option alternatives, you have to talk to them about how their children are endangering other children. But I think what you want to avoid, the problem with outright bans is who gets punished. It's not the parent who gets punished, it's the child. So then what happens is they retreat. A lot of people who are very fiercely anti-vaccine just homeschool. And then we just don't know. We don't know who the enemy is anymore because we don't know who isn't vaccinated. So I think it's finding this balance between encouraging people and then a little bit of carrot, a little bit of stick, and trying to find the right balance. And most people who are vaccine hesitant do come around, aside from this 1-2% of people who you'll never convince. And I think that probably you just kind of write them off.
How worried about this should we be, given that we're seeing more and more outbreaks?
I think we should be fairly worried. People have forgotten how awful things like, in my childhood, I had vaccine, I had the measles, I had the mumps, I had the chicken pox. And each time, really bad things happened to people in my cohort. Kids died, kids ended up with brain damage. In the era of polio, people ended up with severe disabilities for life. They ended up in iron lungs. There are real consequences to all this stuff. So there are people who say, these things are benign. We all had the diseases in our childhood and we survived. And that's true, but many of us didn't survive. And we can't forget those voices that were silenced.
As someone who both, as you mentioned, kind of studies the history of this stuff, but also probably has this conversation a lot, do you get personally frustrated about the fact that it seems like we're doing it again?
Yeah, it does get frustrating that you have these same discussions over and over again. But I think that's the reality. You know, people become new parents. They are concerned. Their fears are legitimate. Are they valid if they're not legitimate? So I think we have to give people that slack, and we have to invest in education. And some of the blame, to be honest, goes back to public health for terrible communication. We treat public health too often like a religion, just do this and trust me. And we're not in a trusting era. That's good for many reasons, but it's bad for some. So I think we have to do the homework. We have to do the education. We have to do the promotion. Sometimes we have to do the punishment. But all these elements have to be thought through. We can't just do them. We tend to do them reactively now. So it's an outbreak and we panic. We're going to punish those kids, and that's never going to be effective.
On a personal level, it's just so hard for me to understand what is happening in the minds of people who don't vaccinate their kids. And I don't say that with like, oh, they're dumb or anything. I can't see it that way. So we had a daughter a year and a half ago, and they asked us what vaccines we were going to give her. And I said, all of them, everything you have. And it's so hard for me to see it from their point of view. And maybe that's why it's hard for us to talk to them.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't have any difficulty. I see, who likes to hurt their baby to give them all those needles? Sometimes you feel like your child's a pincushion. So that's part of it. So I think we've for a long time just said, you got to suffer through it. There's a real movement. If you look on the internet, a great movement called It Doesn't Have to Hurt, about, mitigating pain. So you make sure the kids' needles don't hurt. And that makes a real difference. A lot of people who are anti-vaccine, if you probe, if you scratch not too far behind below the surface, you find, I hated getting my vaccine as a kid. It was so painful. I was petrified. And we can't allow ourselves to lose people for those really mundane things. So there's that. Nobody wants to hurt their kid. Nobody wants their kid to have autism. I'm worried about that. Maybe there is a small, maybe they're wrong. Science is often wrong. So there's these doubts come in. Then you see some guy on the internet saying, I've got this magic no-sodes vaccine. It works better. No needle. You just take this pill. Well, it's a sugar pill. But hey, you're not harming your kids. So that's attractive. So there's all these things build on each other. You hear stories. Oh, did you hear about so-and-so's second cousin died because he took a vaccine. So stories get built into mythology. So there's any number of reasons that people listen to or get scared by. So there's all these myths that we have to counter, and we have to counter them constantly.
Thanks a lot, Andre.
Well, thank you. It's an important topic.
Andre Picard, health reporter for the Globe and Mail. That was The Big Story. For more from us, hit us up at thebigstorypodcast.ca or at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. While you're there, check out Three Trips Ahead with Maureen Holloway. It is the best travel podcast. I am not biased. And we are in your social media feeds at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter, at Frequency Pods on Twitter. We are also at Frequency Pods on Facebook, on Instagram. And of course, we are wherever you get podcasts, and I mean that. We're on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Radio Public, Antenna Pod, and something called Dog Catcher. So if you find us there, leave us a rating, leave us a review. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.